11 at 590 WKZL. You know the old Chinese proverb, may you live in interesting times. If you've ever seen an old fat guy run, that's what's been going on the last couple of minutes. Think we've got things under control. 51 degrees in Kalamazoo and a very warm day for December. We'll find out just how long the warmth will continue. And I remember talking to Bob yesterday, and it won't be for long. And so enjoy the temperatures. My dogs frequently like to come to work. And they sit in my car out in the parking lot, and they have a choice. I don't make them come. And this is probably their last day in a long time to get a road trip in the afternoon. Henceforth, this month, it looks like they're going to have to stay home because it would be way too cold out there. But this afternoon, 51 degrees. And so far, no traffic issues. But just when you least expect it, 382-4280, 877-382-4280. If you see something that other drivers should be aware of, traffic signal issue, stalled cars, accidents, you name it. Give us a call. Again, those numbers, 382-4280, 877-382-4280. We've got a quorum this afternoon. Denny Cooley in Master Control, Derek and I holding down the fort in the studio. Denny, how's your afternoon going so far? You got to turn your mic on.
There we go.
There you go.
Okay. No, a balmy spring afternoon. You got to love it. But like you said, things are going to be changing rapidly for us.
Yeah. We've got a busy afternoon here in just a couple of minutes. We're going to be talking with Dylan Scott. And he's from Talking Points Memo. And we're going to get an update on what's happening with Obamacare. What is happening is that it's not the headline news in every newscast anymore. And maybe that's good news. We'll find out when we talk to Dylan Scott in just a few minutes. John Hoadley is going to join us at 3:45. John is a candidate for the seat being vacated by Sean McCann. And he thinks he'd like to go to Lansing, and we'll find out why and what changes he would bring. And then at 4:10, we're going to talk with Bob Fuss, CBS correspondent on Capitol Hill, and we'll find out in the 6 days left that Congress is going to work this year. You know, that's the ultimate part-time job.
It is.
And we're going to talk about what Congress has on their agenda. And then at 4:40 this afternoon, we're going to talk with Jill Fritz. She's the Michigan Director for Humane Society of the United States.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about wolves and a great informational meeting coming up Friday.
We have a full plate today, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
But let's get started with Dylan Scott. Dylan, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing well, Roger. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm just fine. Obamacare, as I lovingly refer to it, has sort of fallen off the news, at least off the front page today. Is that good news?
I think the administration might say so, or at least certainly the tone of the news has changed quite a bit. They touted the other day that healthcare.gov was effectively fixed and rolled out some metrics to demonstrate that. There are still certainly some issues still to be resolved with the website, but it seems to be functioning undoubtedly much better than it was when it first launched. And they actually released some enrollment numbers today, or leaked them, I should probably say, some enrollment numbers today indicating that they saw more enrollments the first 2 days of December than they did in all of October. So I think that indicates that the website does seem to be getting its feet underneath it. And so inevitably, when you don't have a crashed website and, you know, error pages to flash across your TV screen, that that kind of news doesn't tend to grab the media in quite the same way.
I heard on Monday that 1 million people got through on the website. That's great news.
That's what I heard as well, and it sounded like they had about the same number who came on the next day. And so, yeah, that's not a million people enrolled, but just the fact that it's able to handle that many visitors is a huge step up from where it was a couple months ago.
Dylan, while we're talking about this, how do you separate the fixing of issues within the website itself from the normal snowball rolling downhill that we've seen before in the launch, well, for instance, of RomneyCare in Massachusetts, which works, it's the same program. There, very few people signed up in early enrollment, but then as the deadline came closer and closer, they found increasing momentum in enrollments. So how do we separate normal procrastinating human behavior from the operational issues of the website?
That is a great question, Roger, and I'm honestly not sure if we'll ever be able to quite separate what the difference between the two is. But the one way I've been looking at it is two things, I suppose. One is that there's a reason that the administration always said it was most important to get the website working by about this time, because exactly as you said, they always expected the traffic was going to pick up over the next few weeks as people tried to beat the deadline for signing up for coverage that starts on January 1st. The other thing I'm going to be watching as we see more enrollment numbers figure out is the administration, compared to its own targets, certainly is starting out in a pretty big hole. You know, it had about one-fifth as many enrollments in October as it was initially aiming for. And so if it's able to really pick up and actually get pretty close to meeting its initial goals for the end of the year, I think that might tell us that not only was there just this natural acceleration, but they were able to pick up some of the ground that they lost in the first couple of months, which would be a function of a better functioning website.
If the site is physically working better, where will the people who want Obamacare repealed go next? They sort of were focused on the fact that the front end of Obamacare wasn't working very well. Now that that seems to be resolving itself, where will the opponents go next? Do you have any idea?
I do. I think I've actually written, in the interest of self-promotion, written a couple stories about this, that you started to see a kind of gradual transition from the website is broken and therefore Obamacare is broken to, well, you may fix the website or the website may be fixed, but there are still all these other problems with Obamacare. Obviously, the conservative side of things really ran with the canceled policies that people were complaining about, the letters that insurers were sending out. I think you're going to continue to see that. They seem to be, there's a new sort of line of attack about people not being able to keep their doctor, as the GOP says the president promised that they would. I think that's going to continue to come up more and more. And the other issue is, which has been around for a while, but it probably will make a resurgence now that the website isn't really a punching bag, is this looking for very, you know, specific anecdotes of rate shock, people paying a lot more for health insurance than they were before Obamacare. And with each of those, there's a lot of nuance, and the reality is never usually as simple as the headline that you might see or the soundbite or the talking point that certain political figures are pushing out. But those three lines of attack seem to be where the Republicans or opponents of the law are concentrating their energy now that the website is working much better.
We're talking with Dylan Scott. And Dylan, the president came out in a speech this week and was very aggressive, saying this will work, stay with it. We're not going to give up on this. And that's really one of the first times we've seen him really come out swinging, so to speak.
Oh, I agree. And I think that's the White House has said there's going to be a very coordinated effort over the next 3 weeks to try to encourage people to either come back to the website, or if they've been discouraged from coming at all because of the problems that they've heard about, to finally come and check it out. And I do think that's just a function of having a working website. It was hard, and the president said this himself over the last couple months, it was hard to encourage people to go check it out when it wasn't working all of the time. And so I think you're going to see that from the administration. There are a lot of the kind of advocacy groups that have pledged to help people sign up that have said they're going to be ramping up their outreach efforts here over the next couple of weeks. And the insurance companies, who we shouldn't forget, have a very vested interest in making Obamacare work. They're planning to do, you know, ramp up their outreach efforts as well. So it seems like both because the website is working, and as Roger pointed out, just that natural procrastination that people tend to wait up for the next minute, to the last minute to do something.
Right.
The next 3 weeks are just key. And so you're going to see the president leading that charge and all those other groups kind of following in his footsteps.
Dylan, a quick question before we got to let you go. We're running out of time here. So far, the conservatives' position has been we don't like Obamacare. And as they continue to want to repeal Obamacare, when do you see them coming up with a plan as an alternative? Back at the beginning of this, their mantra was repeal and replace. But right. For the last year, I've heard nothing but repeal, repeal, repeal. Are they going to eventually formulate some sort of alternative plan, or are they just going to be critical?
I think you're right in that they're much more interested in the repeal part of repeal and replace. There have been some what I would call token efforts by some factions within especially the House Republican Conference to come up with actual plans, but a lot of them are really just a recycling of old ideas that have been out there for a long time, trying to create well-funded, high-risk pools for the sick people that Obamacare is supposed to help, you know, letting insurers sell insurance across state lines, those sort of things. But those ideas have been out there for a long time, and I think a lot of policy experts would tell you there's a reason that they haven't caught on before, and there's no reason to think that they'll catch on now. So they have those in their pocket to at least point to, like, we do have a plan, but it's definitely much more about the repeal half of repeal and replace than the replacing, at least in the political realm.
Thanks for your time this afternoon, Dylan. If people want to follow your work, I do, how would they find you?
We're on talkingpointsmemo.com, and all the work of myself and my colleagues is up there, so certainly come check us out.
It's a great site, and if you've not been there, all you got to do is go to Google and type TPM, and you'll end up right there. Dylan Scott from Talking Points Memo, thanks for taking time to talk with us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me, Roger.
Have a good one.
Bye.
590 WKZO time, 326. Still got 51 degrees on the outside. After a local news update and we pay a couple of bills, we got something exciting coming our way tomorrow. I'll tell you a little about it. CBS News update and a local news update following just seconds away. And tomorrow the show takes a step. There's a little bit of evolving taking place. And tomorrow there'll be a new sense of direction. Right here on 590 WKZO. Something to brighten your afternoon, so to speak. And that happens tomorrow, but CBS News.
CBS News Update.
Got a car full this afternoon.
A car full.
Yeah, Denny, Derek, and Roger riding home with you.
Yeah.
You thought you were all by yourself in that car, and not so much. We've got 51 degrees on the outside, and coming along here any minute, our good buddy Bob Larson will be by to talk with us about how long these balmy temperatures are going to continue.
Well, the word is he's going to break some bad news to us.
Oh, no.
That's what the word is.
I got out my shorts. I got out
shorts?
my
It's 50 degrees, Roger. Well, it's not 75.
Well, but I figured if it's 51 today, we'd be in the 60s tomorrow.
Yeah, that only works in May. It doesn't work in December.
Oh, okay. No. So this is one of those May-December things?
Yeah, that another version of it, I guess.
I get it. And coming up after we talk with our ace meteorologist and find out if it is going to get cold, we're going to talk with John Hoadley. And one of the things I want to talk to him about is we're messing with a woman's right to control her body in Lansing this afternoon. And curious what his thoughts are on that. But first, we're going to find out what Bob's thoughts are on our warm weather. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Roger.
I got my shorts on, and I've opened up the swimming pool. And am I crazy?
For today, not so much, but in terms of what's to come, yeah.
Okay. Break my heart.
Well, it's been a long time since we have discussed average temperatures, but it's worth repeating and reviewing. Right now, given the warmth above 50 degrees throughout the area, it is incidentally 52 at the airport.
51 here.
Very close. And the average high today, on the 4th of December, is 39.
Ooh.
Wow.
This is nice.
39. So yeah. This is very nice, but that leads to my word.
And the word is?
The word is farewell.
So long for a while.
Right. Yes.
That's right.
Until maybe April.
And we'll see. It doesn't take much to get above 50 at some point. Any time we get a storm that cuts to our west, it often brings milder weather up. Even in the dead of winter, we sometimes flirt with 50, albeit for just a few hours. So this probably isn't the last time we'll see 50. But it is going to be the last time we'll see 50 in at least the next a week or two, because it's about to come cold and colder as we go through the next several days.
Okay.
Kind of a two-prong attack. Phase one, the colder weather begins to move into the area tonight. It's not the type of front that when it comes through, we go from 50 to 30 in an hour and a half. It's not going to be that drastic. Colder air will just start to ooze into the area, kind of seep into the area. And by morning, we're at 38, so we're still above freezing. The fog, which has been prevalent, still kind of murky out there right now. Mm-hmm. It'll still be with us first thing this evening, along with a spotty shower, a little drizzle. But once the wind shifts into the north, the breeze picks up a bit, that fog will dissipate. So that will not be an issue overnight or tomorrow morning, upper 30s by morning. But then rather than rising, temperatures tend to continue to drop during the day tomorrow, ending up below freezing by tomorrow evening sunset. A cloudy sky, a gusty wind. Maybe a few flurries, but nothing significant in terms of lake effect snow. It's just the cold that's moving in. 23 for a low tomorrow night, and Friday's high, only 28.
Is that prong one?
That is phase one, prong one of the two-prong attack.
Okay. Tell us about prong two.
Well, there's going to be a storm system that will come up out of the southern plains and probably bring us some snow in the late Sunday night time frame. I think we're kind of on the northern fringe of this, likely to miss out on the very heavy snow, but we could pick up a few inches worth in the late Sunday night time frame. Snow or no snow, it gets a lot colder for Monday night and Tuesday, and I do believe there will be some lake effect snow with that cold outbreak. How much? Way too early to say, but at least you know what we're accustomed to finding behind a big cold front this time of year. It could be a, you know, amounts will vary, maybe an inch or two in town, several inches to our west and southwest. But the one thing I'm very concerned about is the amount of cold that comes in with that second blast. We could be looking at nighttime lows in the single digits and highs struggling to get out of the teens once we get to Tuesday and Wednesday.
But we're not going to be getting snowfall like most of the nation has received over the last 24 hours, are
we? Yeah, we're hearing a lot about this storm that's moving across the country.
Right.
The change to colder weather here is accompanied without snow and without ice, because some places that are not going to get the snow are going to be getting freezing rain and sleet. Not expecting that here. A little more concerned, though, at the second blast, but not the first one.
You said most of the heavy snow was going to our south.
That's with that second storm, yes.
Who is getting...
Could say that with the first storm, too. The first storm, the most significant snow is going to run from southern Kansas, northern Oklahoma, through the southern half of Missouri, up through southern Illinois, and into parts of western Kentucky, kind of along the Ohio River. That's with the first storm. The second storm is probably the heaviest snow is probably a little farther north than that, maybe from Peoria to Indianapolis to Cleveland, but time will tell.
How heavy a snow are those folks going to get?
First storm, probably talking about a pretty sizable area, 3 to 6 inches, locally more than six. Second storm, we might see heavier amounts. There might be a band of 6 to 10 inches accumulating in some places with that second storm.
Now, you guaranteed that's going to stay off to the south. I've got that in my notes here. That Bob said
it's in the
on
notes.
This date that the heavy snow will remain to our south.
Right. I think we can get a few inches out of it, whether it's 1 to 3, 2 to 4, something along those lines, but not expecting a 6 to 10, 6 to 12-inch snowfall, no.
Okay. I've got that in my notes. Appreciate it. Have a good one, Bob.
You too, Roger. Take care.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
590 WKZO time is 3:46, still got 51 degrees, as promised. Joining us now, John Hoadley. John would like to replace Sean McCann. John, how you doing? Where did he... We've lost him. We're going to have to start over. I don't know where our call went. We're having a fun afternoon here with the computer.
We're working on that connection right now, Roger, so we'll get that on the air here in a moment.
Okay.
He's probably out campaigning.
Yeah, I'm certain.
I mean, more than likely. So.
Yeah, on a nice, warm fall day like this, I think we're ready. John, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Roger?
Fine. I'm sort of irritated with computers this afternoon. Do you have the love-hate relationship with computers that most of us do?
I think we all go through that at some point in time. Great when they work.
Yeah. This afternoon, I'm on the hate part of that love-hate relationship. But let's talk about Lansing. Today, the news is that we're about to fiddle with a woman's right to control her body. If you were elected to replace Sean McCann, where would you come down on this kind of issue?
Well, I'd start by saying I am 100% pro-choice. I'm a strong supporter of women's freedom, women's health care. And, you know, for me, bills like that are moving through the legislature right now really are at are just political theater at their worst. This isn't about, this does nothing to improve our state. This is aimed at making it harder for people to get basic health care. And frankly, it's just the way they're going about it is just wrong. You know, where 3% of people in the state of Michigan can make decisions for, you know, 100% of our population without going through traditional Democratic channels, that's just wrong.
Mm-hmm. And why are they doing it now? If this is political theater, who are they trying to impress with this, and why in December, why at this juncture is this taking place in your mind?
Well, I think this is unfortunately what we're seeing happen frequently, where some of the biggest campaign donors and campaign supporters are saying, this is our top priority, and we need you to get it done for us. In that case, it would be Right to Life Michigan. And in this case, you know, with the bills that we're talking about in the signature collection, I think people are hoping that they can make a big power play that that a majority of the state disagrees with, and hope that the issue goes away by election time of next year.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, this impacts families forever, and we're going to see this issue and the problems that it arises continue into the future.
Let's change the subject. Yesterday there was news about Detroit, and apparently, as if it was there was really any doubt, I mean, Kevin Orr was brought in. His expertise was nothing other than bankruptcies, and so it seemed we were destined to end up in this situation. What are your thoughts about Detroit's bankruptcy and people who are now looking at getting 13 cents on the dollar of the pensions that they were promised? Does the state have any skin in this game?
Absolutely, the state has skin in this game. Because Michigan families have skin in this game. You know, these were pensions that according to the state constitution, should have some level of protection. And more importantly, the pensions were pieces of compensation that were bargained for. And on our side, you know, people pay for them with their time, their energy, the lower wages they may have taken instead of with the promise of a good pension. And now we're coming back and saying that those should be renegotiated. You know, let's be honest. The people who are going to suffer the most from these decisions are the people who've already put in the most. You know, when banks made loans to Detroit, you know, for better or for worse, they looked at the books. They could check the balance sheets. And when they chose to continue to give them bonds and other types of loans, and that was a calculated business decision. That unfortunately they're going to cut. They should come up short on now, but people put the time in. People did the work. People are relying on those pensions, and now that they have the risk of being gutted, we have to stop that, and we have to make sure that we're telling those stories that, you know, this is the money that people are depending on to keep the lights on, to keep the heat on. These are a big deal.
Well, staying on that topic, 34 states across the nation are having problems, the same thing that Detroit is having. Do you envision a day when maybe this would spread beyond Detroit and spread further throughout the state of Michigan?
Well, I think every municipality is taking a look at what does the future of local financing look like? What does the future of our municipal finances look like in a world where we have questions on the state budget, on the way that we share revenue? You know, over the next couple of years in Lansing, and of course places across Michigan and across the country, you know, they're going to be asking the question, how do we fund the communities in which we live? And that's going to be one of the most important pieces of the budget, you know, in answering a fundamental question. How do we keep our communities safe? How do we help our communities prosper? And all those questions start at the budget, which is why we need to support a budgeting process that puts people and our communities first in Michigan.
John, in a perfect world, how would you see sorting out how we're going to keep the state's finances on an even keel and begin to do something about the financial problems that have been passed down from the state to local governments?
You know, that's going to be a big question, right? I mean, it's easy to point out some of the problems, and it's harder to work through the solution. So I'm going to start by saying I don't have the answer to every single question, which is why I believe in bringing a lot of people on board to have a robust conversation. But I do think that there is an opportunity for lawmakers, the legislature, and other folks to take a look at what is working and what is not. You know, are these tax breaks to big businesses producing the jobs that we thought they would? And if they're not, well, then maybe we should either move those tax breaks or roll some of them back. You know, when you look at one of the largest unreported pieces of the state budget, it's tax revenue foregone because of tax breaks to businesses. And so we're actually giving away more tax breaks to big businesses in Michigan right now than they're bringing in an income to the state for in terms of tax revenue. So I'm just saying this as there are some things that maybe it's time for us to reassess how well those ideas are working and use it as a way to start thinking about holistically how do we fix our budget and financial problem.
How do you keep that open mindset that you're talking about and run for the office and try to reduce this process down to a few sound bites? This is very complex. We didn't get into this situation overnight. It's going to take years to work our way out of it. But how do you communicate that to voters?
Well, I think it's continuing the ongoing conversations and dialogue that I've been having over the last few months with folks and continuing to bring people along in that process. You know, just one example that comes to my mind, a couple weeks ago I met a guy named Saul, and we had a fantastic 30-minute conversation on public financing for libraries. How do we pull together the budget that keep the books and technology available in our communities? And it was fascinating. And so while the campaigns are often asked to reduce pieces to 7-second sound bites,
yeah,
I think at some level we can resist that urge by having these one-on-one conversations, by filling out our issue survey at johnhoadley.com, by, you know, just showing up for events and having this dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, it took a while to get here, so we won't solve this overnight, but if we don't start today, then there's definitely no hope of fixing it tomorrow.
If people would like to flesh out their understanding of your vision of the future, how would they do that, John?
The two easiest ways are go on to johnhoadley.com. That's johnhoadley.com. Fill out an issue survey or contact us with a longer form email. We'd love to hear what you're thinking. Or join the conversation on Facebook. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/john.hoadley. So we're really easy to get a hold of. We're also on Twitter at John Hoadley. So it's, you know, we want to talk to folks because, like I said in the beginning, I don't have all the answers, but I know that we're a really smart community, and so people are out there with great ideas that we can incorporate.
Thanks, John. You have a good afternoon. Thanks for taking time to talk with us.
Thanks, and good luck with the computer.
Well, thank you. John Hoadley on 590 WKZO.
Good luck with the computer. How many times have you heard that?
Yes.
Really?
Yes,
I mean, really.
And boy, do I feel that way today. We'll give you a hint of some changes coming to a radio station somewhere near you. And you may get a glimpse of that future as early as tomorrow, right here on 590 WKZO. Yeah, it's still damp out there, but it's mild. We will see some occasional light rain or drizzle along with areas of fog going into the evening. But as Bob said, the fog will clear and it'll get clearly much colder. All that happening and changes to afternoon radio happen tomorrow. We'll give you a preview of that when you tune in at 3.
The trifecta continues after CBS News and Kalamazoo's news from the WKZO.com newsroom on 590 WKZO Kalamazoo.